Mr. Man, Reel 11. We were talking about the Volturno crossing, Mr. Man. Do you recall going over it yourself?
Yes. Yeah, of course, I had this 1500 weight truck and the tanks. And to get across there, we had to wait until a pontoon bridge was put across the river. This was more or less the floating of bits of boats and then planks and wires across it to hold them together and drive the truck across. It was a bit up and down. It was more like waves coming from both ways and a bit swaying as well. But anyhow, we got across all right, coming up to the other side.
Were you under fire as you went across?
No, because the cut ahead, the line must have been roughly about a mile or so ahead by that time. And when we got across, there was the other vehicles, of course, were following. You had the tank ones, and then there was the medical truck as well, and some of the others. And then we consolidated across this other side with in a big like palace area, it's supposed to be. I don't remember exactly who it was. Some Italian nobility it was, and it was his grounds, and great big poplar trees, and a big curved staircase going up both sides of the entrance. It never actually got into the palace itself. That's where we consolidated until the next bit moved for us. From there, I think I mentioned about Jack Stevenson, Bishop of Castle.
Being wounded.
That's right. He really wasn't that right before. That was right before the war tour now. Now from there, I'm just a little bit hazy as to the names of the places, because most of them I've forgotten than that. But I remember there's one bit of road we went up and into a shelled out village which had been taken by the infantry in front of us. And there was an old motorbike there to the wayside, and we pulled it. We're still in shelling distance, like not small arms fire. And we pulled into this village, hiding the vehicle as best we could, just to attempt to stop, and trying this old motorbike up and down the road, but towards the rear, not up to the front.
What was the terrain like that you're now moving through?
Well, this was just easing a little bit. It was still muddy, but not as muddy as what it had been. Going up into the Rockingham Thing area, which I mentioned previously. They weren't the sunny Italy days, dull days, what I can remember. Occasionally a little bit of sunshine, but not what you would class as sunny Italy weather. No.
Where were you? You know, as you say, it was possibly drying off slightly, but it was still winter weather, wasn't it, at that time?
Oh, yes, yes.
What kind of shelter were you finding for yourselves?
Well, shelter was providing that you weren't within the shelling range. If you had your truck, I would sleep in the back of the canvas-covered truck. Apart from that, if you could get into a building and there where it was dry, you would settle down there as near as you could. But you were on a constant alert all the time as well, but at least it was dry to get in an old building. Many a time you could get into one, you maybe found one or two dead Germans laid in there as well. So there was one place, just mentioned, it was called San Arcangelo, which was maybe further up because I'm a bit confused with it, but this San Arcangelo, we'd taken it and it was more or less full of booby traps with the doors and that into houses. But anyhow, I remember we got into a funeral director's parlour, as you might call it. It was all coffins laid about. So we were there for the night and there's three or four of us caught in, and we each laid in a coffin for the night. It was a bit of a funny sight in the morning, seeing them all bending up and sitting in the coffins there.
At your position in the movement of the various units, did you have to stand to every morning like the rest of the infantry had to?
Yes, especially in the line. And When you were back, you didn't actually have a stamp too. You were more or less there, you could be called, but in the line itself, dawn and dusk was always a stamp too. And if, I was saying, if it was two of you in the slit trench, well, one of you would be awake, you were best to keep awake, and of course, stamp two, one of you was asleep, you was waking the other one up. Stamp two and look to the front. And hope you were going to see at the end of the day. But really, there was a lot more stand toes than any action at dawn. Well, occasionally dawn action, but because we dawn as well, you had to see that the patrols were back. They'd been out all the night patrolling. You could go and patrol and see the enemy, and I don't doubted that they'd know about seeing you, but anyhow, nothing would happen. They'd be seeing one another at a distance and pretend you hadn't.
But at this moment in time, you were still driving this truck which carried the ammunition supplies for.
It was getting on and off then.
When the guns called for your supplies, in effect, you know, they're running out themselves. How was that taken forward to the gun line itself?
Going, of course, you were always behind the infantry, you weren't in the immediate line, but you were close to it. Then again, there were only these 2.3-pounder guns, and the distance behind, I should say, maybe in the range about half a mile, near, I can remember.
So you were as close as that to the front-line infantry?
Oh, yeah, as close to that. Of course, if there were tanks coming over, but to be honest, in my experience there, while with the anti-tanks, there was very, very little of it done in action with the actual anti-tank gear. But what also was used against tanks and even German infantry positions were used, there was the bow for anti-aircraft guns we used, and they were used as a ground to the enemy offensive. I mean, because the German aircraft, whilst there were a few odd ones come over, it was nothing to the extent what it had been earlier in the war. But both of them, they were pretty good. They were better than the anti-tank ones, I think.
So how close would you in your truck be to the nearest anti-tank gun that you were serving?
Oh, it would only be a matter of yards, especially if there was a bit of cover. You didn't use to drop the gun off and then go away back to A or B echelon further back. You would go back. It depended on the terrain as well. I mean, you had your camouflage nets and that, but even then, if you were getting up to a gun position, there's no doubt that some of the enemy must have seen you at that range. But then it was a case of getting the truck and getting to the best camouflage position possible. I mean, there's always farmhouse and that, and the farmhouse could always be used as a target for the enemy.
Were you coming across a lot of mining? Were the roads mined, for example?
The roads were mined, yeah. Now, as you're driving the truck, you used to have two sandbags under your calves, under both your legs, in case the miner. But the roadsides, they were mined in areas, of course. And I remember on one occasion that we had to turn the trucks round and go back some distance. And we turned round in a field and we didn't realise, when I say we, there was about four or five trucks of us. We'd gone into this field, turned round and got out without an incident. And the other parts of the field, some parts were mined, and we got out of it.
You've mentioned booby trapping, which the enemy were doing it quite a considerable amount, were they?
Booby trapping as well.
You would obviously be warned about this, were you?
Oh yes, you're always warned. I mean, you could get some of this. I'm jumping from the times when I was in the anti-tank and in the line positions from later on. A bit confused here, but just incidents that happened during the war, would put it down as that. And I mean, with booby trapping, the Germans would booby trap their own dead men. I mean, thing like him wearing a watch, for instance. You know, if he'd have a watch on, but if you tended to lift his arm and take the watch off, that could be banned and the booby trap would go off. And so with even laid position, if you could lift the German up, move him in that position, and he could be booby trapped underneath and lift him up and up would go over. Doors in villages and towns there, they would set a booby trap, the door would be ajar open, maybe what, 10 inches or something like that. And if you went in and pushed that, well, it could be booby trapped away. Or under the floorboards, it could be booby trapped as you went into the house. And there's lots and lots of things.
It must have been quite a shock to you to see your friends killed by booby traps when you think everything was safe.
Yeah. And once on the river bankside, I know we were actually there, I was with the infantry decently. And there's one actually a friend of mine, but him and I were all comrades together. And he was crawling up this bankside, which wasn't a high bank, maybe 10, 12 foot to the peak of it, I would think, crawling on his hands and knees, because Jerry was just at the other side of the dried up river as it was. And he crawled over the top of what it was a mine, first known mine, and of course it just blew his chest away. It's funny, and yet you were so near to him. And I was always scared of mine myself, I must admit, I was no hero. But I thought you would tread carefully, but there again, treading carefully, you were still standing on one. But look, there wasn't like, once somebody had been wounded by a mine, of course, everybody was as cautious as they could be. I mean, you could start digging amongst the ground with your bayonet, but that's all time consuming. Then again, it's all right if you're out of sight of the enemy. So you just have to take chances. But I was lucky, very, very lucky.
What types of mines did he use?
The German, like what they used to call a shoe mine as well. It was only about the size of the sole of your shoe, and it was more like anti-personnel. That was mainly that. You would get other mines, like the land mine, which were more for disabling vehicles and even tanks there, blowing the tracks off them if they went over them. Even getting to today, you hear about these mines being throughout the world. There used to be a tank called a flail tank, and at the front of it was like a big roller and chains attached to it, and that could go over an area, and it was hammering this roller at the front was rotating and slapping the chains onto the ground, and it would explode the mine that way.
Did you have those with you, flail tanks?
No. This was sort of great and flame.
You mentioned...
Occasionally you get to somewhere where they would make a track, and this was marked by a tape, and you would get engineers, or even some of the pioneer corps, I think they did as well, they'd mind cleaning. And where they knew that with the mines, they would put a track through this mine, more or less the size of a footpath, you'd say. We've got one fairy stone, not a white footpath. And the engineers, as I say, would go through, or your own engineers in the battalion to do mine clearing. And you would then have to keep into that track to get through. Well, that was all right, and especially at night time. An example of this track, you would get onto a carrying party. You could that'd be the carrying party for another battalion that had taken over from the line. Now he was to carry up at night time the what bit food and water ammunition and whatever was required. I remember one occasion that we were on this track and getting quite close to the line. And the Germans, they would do it at, like crossfire, but on a fixed line basis. And you could have a couple of machine guns, as it was in this case, it must have been maybe 100 to 200 yards apart, but they were set so that in front of them at a distance the high old cross, this fine cross of. One occasion I'd over on this carrying party, and in this track where it was possibly mine at each side, and this was clear, and the front man, he got down and he just froze. He wouldn't move between shelling, we'd been shelling at the time. And he had a bundle of blankets. I remember his kind of went there, and he was laid down, this bundle of blankets. He was going to be risky to go around him. It wasn't the way to go on the top because you had your whatever you were carrying in there. And he just froze. But eventually, just after climb over him, and that was it. And they carried on up to the dropping point, which was as close as possible to your line without really being exposed. But that was night time. Now, we could be back on the same night. We came back, and once we got past this track again, we just had to retreat our steps, and there was a farmhouse. So we were really tired, you know, we were fed up and tired and all that, and there were three of us. I said, oh, we'll get this house and we'll have a fag. So we went into the house and there was nobody in it, and there was a table there, formed, and there was formed a chair, and we sat down there and we had a cushy cigarette, how and that. There was shelling going on, and all of a sudden there was a hell of a bang, and the shell took one of the corners of the bedroom off the house. We scattered, we dived under the table, whatever we could, and that was, fortunately, there wasn't a lot of debris come down, and that was stopping for the cigarette. Mm-hmm. Another occasion on a carrying party, not the same action, but it was sure things happened, and some of them in front said they were sat down, resting. They're stopping, and I walked past them, and I think I had two gallon cans of water I was carrying, and the rifle was slung across my shoulders there. And, I said, what, straight up, and they're running, yeah, straight on. So it was dark, and I carried straight on, expecting to be somebody ahead. And I got to one point, and it was like in little waddies, and there's somebody coming over this top of this big waddy on the left. And I thought, dear me, and my hands full of these tins, the rifle strapped round me, I thought, oh, the hell is it, German or whatever. Fortunately, it was one of these lads out of the line who ever came these. Oh, I can't remember the regiment now. Anyhow, I said, oh, I'm just up there. Well, I only went forward about another, 20 yards or so, and it was a sergeant major. He said, what the hell are you doing here? What were you doing? And I said, carrying party. Like, we're rocking book carrying party. He said, you don't come right. He said, shouldn't be right up here, carrying party. Should have dropped it away back a bit. He said, get back. And he said, when you go back about 10 places, he says, be careful because it's on these 6 lines. Again. So anyhow, I just dropped the water there and went back when I got through this part where he'd warned me, and we got back, and this bloke was still sat there, so I give them a mouthful, like, I won't repeat it on the tape, but I thought, thank God, that's the last time I'll go pushing in front of anybody who spoke.
What were the major problems or dangers of carrying parties? Obviously, you've just mentioned the fact that you travelled basically through the night, it was night work.
Yeah, well, with a carrying party, trucks would take you up with what you were going to carry, and they would stop. If it was a road or a track or a cross country, whatever it was, they'd stop well back. And then you maybe have to carry them sometimes up to about a mile, easy. And of course, the dangers was mainly from shelling, if you got shelling over. And then periodically, get close, a small arms fire would come over, maybe not directly, exactly, because at night time you could open up and give a burst, even if you couldn't see anybody, just let them know you were still there. From both sides that would happen. Another thing was, of course, getting separated, because depending on what you're carrying, I mean, you have some heavy load at the time, and some would be fitter than that, and others not so fit, and then they'd get the stragglers on. But usually, Well, you wouldn't make time the, if there was an officer in charge or whoever was in charge. It would almost say, name of the last man. And if it was, let's say, Smith, he'd come with the name. And every so often he'd shout, last man, Smith, would be the reply. So at least you knew the last man was, when I say shouted, it, you didn't shout the top of your voice, but it got back. But that was a case of stragglers, or occasionally not one would get wounded, but it was more or less good fortune or whatever fired at him. Well, he hadn't actually fired at him with the fire, but he just been lucky to finally have his number on it.
And you move up in single file, presumably?
Oh, yes, single file, yeah.
And was that within touching distance of the man in front, in theory?
No, you didn't got to get too close. I mean, even if you were advancing and that, never get too close. Because if you can imagine the World War One, they used to go over the top and they were all more or less bunched together in that. Well, if the enemy opened up after you and there's a lot, it's bound to hit some of you. But if you've got spaces between you, don't get too close together, because then there's only probably one casualty with less chance of being caught. Oh, this is maybe what, 10 feet between or something like that. But you were spread out, and that was just for your own safety.
You've mentioned water. What else might you be carrying in the carrying party?
Oh, well, you would be taking some food up for the lads in the line. You may have had one of these Dixies that would hold, oh, what, 7 or 8 gallons from the night. There were way, the only two of you used to do that if it was uneven terrain, because that was another thing you were caught with. And if it was slippery, it was muddy in there. But you would have, as I say, that was, the ammunition was to carry up. If a note had been sent back for any specialised equipment, or if the radio had gone out of action, they'd want to swap the radio over for transmitting and that. And I know one occasion which passed in mind, for we were in the line at the time and we sent back for TSM, basically, which meant Thompson submachine guns, because the proximity of the Germans were that close, first of all. And what was sent up for us the next night was tea, sugar and milk. So I was a few choice words spread about that. But that was it, and ammunition had to be carried up. Socks. We even sent clean socks up. There was a bit of occasion when the socks that were sent up, they were dripping wet through to the weather conditions. So whilst they were maybe clean, they were soaking wet. You take your boots off your chain and your feet would be as white as if you'd been in the bath for a long, 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 long time soaking them. You'd put them on. That would be it. Ammunition, food. You were lucky if you got a hot meal, mind, in the line. Other than that, they would send up some tin stuff and these, like, ship's biscuits, hard biscuits. They didn't use the treaty to butter in those days. Even when it was in general use, when you could get something to spread on your bread, out of the line there, it was this oily old marge, they used to call it, some sort of a margarine.
Did you ever experience a situation where what you were carrying was absolutely essential, and because the unit was under attack and was running out of something?
Yeah, well, that was mainly ammunition.
And you'd have to carry that through irrespective of what was happening.
You'd get that up as close as you could, yeah. But also under the cover of darkness, because daytime, if you're in a position like that, and you just have to ease up on the firing, as it were, and just hope for the best that it can come up. But I have known an occasion where there was a carrying party of the... I referred to them as niggers in those days, which you know, probably get put inside for doing that now. But anyhow, I remember that, and the little diary that I was going out to keep one, I put the niggers didn't go up that night. Apparently they set up and they didn't go the full distance. We had to do without them. I told them that night. Just carry through on to the next day.
Where were these coloured people from? Were they West Indies or Indians or?
North Africa. There's some of them that used to come. They used to have the, not like military dress, but they had the long dress on. It was long black and white stripes. And I think they were the ones that were referred to as the goons, which later became Harry Seacombe's goons. They were on there. And there was Indian troops as well. Gurkhas, they were there, but the Gurkhas were ground lads. If you were in the line and Gurkhas were sort of present and going through your lines on patrol, which you eventually got to know if they were coming through, but if you were wearing a German boot, you would take that off and put it. Because a Gurkha, when he was on patrol, one way of identifying the British or the Germans, you say, or the Allied troops, was that the boots were laced up. You had boot laces in. But the Germans used to wear the jack boots. And if you had a jack boot on and a girt coming from the shadow or something like that, that was it. You lost your life and you'd gone away with one of your idiots. They used to do that. The little girt was around that. I've not seen them cooking themselves a chicken. I say cooking themselves, the wooden fire and the chicken was thrown onto it. But at the same time, if you walk past them and between the sun and the chicken and cast a shadow on it, they wouldn't eat the chicken. No. They used to give you a mouthful like in the land. They wouldn't eat the chicken if your shadow fell across it.
This was a religious kind of thing, was it?
They all used to collect the ears.
You mentioned that when we're talking about booby trapping, lifting the German bodies and so forth, was there a great deal of taking away mementos, souvenirs from German dead?
Sometimes the Germans were bad enough. I mean, there was some of our own lads, they were bad enough. I mean, a man was, of some men, would think nothing of snapping a finger off to get a ring off. And watches was one of the things that I used to go for. You know, the one dead German, and that's when I did a spell of stretcher bearing. And there was a German, and this one I was Wally, they called him. Wally. And he felt inside this, it was a German actually, and inside his jacket there was a pocket which went down to more or less the bottom of the jacket, and he got a pocket watch out of there. And I've never seen a pocket watch like it. It had chime bells on it when it was wound up, and a real antique looking. Yeah. But that was it. Something would happen at times. Take a German, you'd probably find some English cigarettes or a cigarette lighter or something that offer British lads. So it wasn't done to all of them. There's also the field of booby traps, and maybe I was a bit too fierce, but then again, I've seen things and see something bulge in a German's pocket. You would, if you were curious enough, which you could be at a time that I'd been myself, you would look to see what it was. But you went gingerly about it in case there was a booby trap there again.
Was it against officially against regulations to take things off bodies?
Oh, yeah, and looting as well. It was really against the looting.
Did you experience a lot of looting?
Not a lot, because with the looting, you see, the Germans were always in retreat in the early town campaign. And, I mean, they did. Not only did they do the loading, they did the clearing out as well. One place where we're getting back again now to one of the medical team was a hospital. And this hospital, it is an Italian hospital, and it had a tunnel come, I don't know what you could call it, an escape way. This tunnel went to the village, to the hospital, all in the ground. And in this hospital, I know there was a lot of medical tools, and the medical officer, he took them.